Okay, we're back for episode 202, 202. Joe, how you doing?
I'm just fine, Tim. How are you?
Very well, thanks. Been some interesting developments this week before we get to our main topic. Derek Chauvin's lawyer is seeking a new trial for his defendant. Derek Chauvin's lawyer filed a motion seeking a new trial, alleging prosecutorial and jury misconduct and saying a change of venue should have been granted. Mr. Chauvin was convicted last month of two counts of murder and one count of manslaughter for kneeling on George Floyd's neck and back for 9 minutes and 29 seconds while Mr. Floyd was handcuffed and lying prone in the street. Mr. Floyd's death sparked a summer of unrest in Minneapolis and across the country. Eric Nelson, Mr. Chauvin's attorney, requested a hearing where the judge could re-interview some jurors. He said the purpose of the questioning is to show the jury committed misconduct, felt threatened or intimidated, felt race-based pressure during the proceedings, and or failed to adhere to instructions during the deliberations in violation of Mr. Chauvin's constitutional rights to a due process and a fair trial. Mr. Nelson didn't name a specific juror or explain what the misconduct he is alleging in a court filing Tuesday. He asked the court to grant him more time to fully investigate the issue. Judge Peter Cahill has denied requests for a retrial at multiple points during the proceedings after Mr. Nelson said the jury was being swayed by pressure to convict Mr. Chauvin out of fear that a failure to convict would unleash a new round of social unrest in Minneapolis. I think one issue is this guy, Brandon Mitchell. He was one of the only juror who has so far identified himself since reaching a verdict on April 20th, said two lawyers not involved in Mr. Chauvin's defense. Potential jurors were asked about political activism in the questionnaires. Mr. Mitchell was asked by the court in the questionnaire whether he had attended any anti-police rallies, an anti-police rally in Minneapolis. He said he also was asked whether he'd ever participated in protests about police or use of force or police brutality. He told the Wall Street Journal he didn't recall how he answered those questions. A social media post that emerged in recent days shows Mr. Mitchell wearing a Black Lives Matter t-shirt during a rally last August, marking the 57th anniversary of Reverend Martin Luther King's March on Washington. Some groups, including the NAACP, advertised the rally as a way to recommit to Dr. King's dream vision of racial equality. Others tried for voter registration, police reform, and the search for justice for Mr. Floyd. In the post, Mr. Mitchell appears in a photograph with two relatives, what appears to be a bar or restaurant. I saw the picture. They didn't look like they were social distancing, nor were they wearing masks. But again, if you, from what I recall from last year, if you were gathering to protest racism, the virus wasn't a problem. He is wearing a T-shirt that says BLM for Black Lives Matter and a picture of Dr. King and words, "Get your knee off our necks." Some organizers call the march to get your knee off your neck commitment march. He is a 31-year-old basketball coach and said via the text that he attended the march to commemorate Dr. King. Also said he may have been given the t-shirt during the march but didn't recall specifically how. So that's interesting. Might be I guess a evidence that he wasn't particularly I think objective going into the proceedings.
Yeah, I mean the T-shirt with "Get your knee off our neck" is a dead giveaway that there might be some bias. It's hard to somehow hide any place on that point. So one would imagine that they will grant a retrial. It would be preposterous if they don't, right? I mean, there's just so much evidence that it was a kangaroo court, and I think it's that might be kind of a moment of national humor in that there'll be an enormous battle over the assertion that there will be that the jurors were afraid that there could be a riot, and then one imagines the judge granting the retrial, at which point there's an enormous riot.
It's like, and
So
the
this
fact
is
I think the
a
jurors didn't have to wade through a riot or protest each day
yeah. Well,
as they
I
left
mean,
because they weren't sequestered, right, during the trial.
So it was, you know, like we said last week, it's a kangaroo court. I just don't believe these things are real, particularly. You know, I mean,
Because it's so
I think
ludicrous.
that television is a kind of neuro-linguistic programming at this point. The things which seem like, you know, they are given to us and represent some sort of reality, you know, the election night, you know, stuff like this. I really do think that at this point they are 100% theater. They are like the moon landing. You know, these things are just scripted. Actors play the roles. They have a very lethal intent. I mean, I'm not making light of what they're
Yeah.
doing, but I the actual objective reality, and particularly, you know, feeling bad, you know, because your side of the dialectic, particularly now, you know, is the whole European culture is on the chopping block. You know, you just have to stand back and look at the overall attack that's going on and not really pay attention, in my opinion, to these little details. You sent me the video, you know, it's a really good example of California's great middle class hope. The interview with Caitlyn Jenner and Hannity.
Yeah, he is a champion of the middle class, and he's going against government hypocrisy, corruption, and big spending. He's for low taxes and bringing business back to the state.
Yeah, I
He
mean,
wants
so
to make
he's
California normal again.
right. And I mean, he's the front runner. I mean, can you imagine any of the other candidates being permitted to be on Hannity, some, you know, a major news network? So this is the world, you know. I think Jenner will be elected governor. It is done for the purpose of shattering our soul and our psychology. That's why this is being done. All of this is being done
Well, the
to
fact that Hannity sits
diminish our
there,
capacity to resist. You know, I
he's,
wanted to,
yeah.
with your permission, give an example of the neurolinguistic programming that we are experiencing now, and maybe just discuss it for a few seconds after the fact. This is from it's a presentation by Tucker Carlson, and in the presentation, he's asking about the VARs, you know, the safety records for the vaccine,
Yes,
so-called
the
vaccine.
vaccine adverse reaction.
Yeah, that's right. And it seems on the surface that he is actually, you know, sort of on the side of the skeptics of the vaccine, on the side of, you know, objective freedom. But actually, I'm just going to play this bit to show how, in fact, the neurolinguistic the programming that these networks are engaged in now works. I'm just going to play it right now to just listen to it.
Have died after getting the vaccines designed to prevent the virus. Do you know the answer to that question? Do you know anything about the downside? We know a lot about the upside of vaccines. We've been completely in favor of vulnerable people taking vaccines. But what about the potential risks? You think you would know more about that than you do. We talk a lot about vaccines constantly, not just on this show, but in this country. Joe Biden was on TV yesterday talking about vaccines. He wants you to get one. Everyone in authority wants you to get one. In fact, you probably already had your shot, and good for you. If you haven't had your shot, you're under enormous pressure to get your shot. You understand that soon you may not be able to fly on commercial airlines or go to work at the office or send your children to school if you don't have the shot. Meanwhile, the social pressure is enormous. Friends may have informed you already that you are not welcome at their parties or their weddings if you haven't been vaccinated. So there is a lot of pressure to comply. At some point, you probably will comply. It's just too difficult not to be vaccinated in this country.
So there is neuro-linguistic programming in spades. In other words, Carlson is someone who has created trust in what's called the political right, and so he can be seen as you know, having an objective perspective in terms of vaccinations. But if you go through what he said, he's actually just putting cues in your mind about the pressure and about how you're going to succumb eventually anyway.
Has he been vaccinated?
Yeah.
And it's not vaccinated, by the way. He's been injected.
It's injected, exactly
Yeah.
right.
But I mean, has he said he's been, quote,
I'm
vaccinated?
not sure about that. I believe so, but my memory isn't clear.
Okay.
I'll have to check that. But I would bet 10 to 1 that he would claim to have had the injection, because his life is that of a lifetime actor. So Carlson, has CIA background. His father was the head of Radio Free Europe, for one thing. I will say that his background is better. He is the conservative choice in the newscasters. I mean, compared like to Anderson Cooper, who is both a CIA agent, a child of an oligarch, and an open homosexual. So this would be the trifecta of bringing kind of the objective news stories to the public. But Carlson is, he represents what I think conservative Americans are hoping will kind of we the country return to this sort of to a lot of the positions that he takes, which are very, very reasonable, because bear in mind, you don't get to engage in neuro-linguistic programming if you don't have the trust created. So a lot of the stuff that he says are correct. They're even, I think, sometimes daring. He gets the right people to attack him. The ADL attacked him. I would compare him to a Noam Chomsky, who does a lot of picayune criticism of Israel. And then when it comes, so he develops trust, but when 9/11 comes around and you have the building symmetrically collapse, he just says, well, stuff happens.
But then
So,
he's willing to talk about UFOs and
yeah,
space
UFOs, that's a,
Little Green
so
Men on
anyway,
his
this
show,
is
yeah.
my point is that, you go from the Caitlyn Jenner Hannity interview to Carlson's clever way of getting into your mind that it's inevitable you're going to eventually take the
Yeah,
vaccine.
where does he get that there's too much pressure?
Well,
When
I mean, if you go through,
I see enormous pushback
well,
on the
sure.
vaccine, and there's
Well,
laws being passed in states that you not to require, not to have passports. To me, that's
yeah, well, you know
enormous
what?
pressure
Let
the other
me,
direction.
Tim, I'm just going to play it again. I meant to play it twice because I think the second time is a little easier to pick up on that and the NLP. So here I go. I'm just going to play it. Listen to it again.
In this country. Joe Biden was on TV yesterday talking about vaccines. He wants you to get one. Everyone in authority wants you to get one. In fact, you probably already had your shot, and good for you. If you haven't had your shot, you're under enormous pressure to get your shot. You understand that soon you may not be able to fly on commercial airlines or go to work at the office or send your children to school if you don't have the shot. Meanwhile, the social pressure is enormous. Friends may have informed you already that you are not welcome at their parties or their weddings if you haven't been vaccinated. So there's a lot of pressure to comply. At some point, you probably will comply. It's just too difficult not to be vaccinated in this country.
Yeah, so this really isn't particularly difficult to understand. It's there's a misdirection because of the trust that the conservative Americans gives to this guy. Their minds are, the filters are down, and then he puts in these the he inputs these assertions. I mean, like the description of the social pressure, the not being able to go to parties. I mean, this is an extreme case. These are not normal things, even at the moment. I imagine we'll get there, but at the moment they're not. And so for Carlson to put these into people's mind, what does it do? Well, it makes those who are thinking, are having, just considering having the vaccine, they will just listen to that, and their unconscious will simply accept the idea that
Yeah,
they're going to.
why not do a show where it's not a vaccine, highlighting that that is a misnomer, a misapplication, a fraudulent marketing of this injection, this drug, and that it is, frankly, it's illegal to acquire it If it is a non-approved drug from the FDA, which it is, it's emergency use authorization, and it's illegal to require it. And the fact that why not do a show about people, lawsuits and people pending legislation that would ban companies or private, businesses or concerns requiring it, and or show how absurd it is to require it in order for you to attend a lousy college or university. To say that's inevitable is ridiculous. I mean, that's not inevitable. Just don't do it. What if people don't comply? That's not
Right.
inevitable.
Right. Of course, it's we're he's he is addressing those that are uncertain. And he's just putting in these very, very clear positions that will tip them, to basically go forward with the injection. Now, this is, I think, a very important revelation. I mean, I don't think it's very hard to see the neurolinguistic programming, but it is important to see Carlson in this role because at this point, I think it's important to understand that the media is entirely infected. There isn't pockets of the media, the mainstream media, the legacy media, that are somehow, not under the control of the injection philosophy that they are trying to impose on the country.
It's the same reason why, Sean Hannity is, giving a straight-faced interview to a man in a dress, asking him about his sport, his achievements in the Olympics, and the guy's talking about his dad who went to war, he's a
Well,
veteran of World War II.
Hannity, I mean, Hannity can be pretty ill-tempered, but this was 100% propaganda moment. I mean, it could have been created by Jenner's campaign manager. In fact, it probably was. So this is just where the media is at. And the idea that Fox News has oases within it, which are outside of the control of the propaganda, I just think is far-fetched. I like a lot of the stuff that Carlson talks about, but remember, you have to create the trust to be able to deliver the propaganda or the neuro-linguistic programming blow later on.
Well, that's the difference between gray propaganda, black propaganda, and white propaganda, So that's all, so yeah, that's the whole function of a network like that, why it was created in the first place, to build trust, blue team versus red team and vice versa,
I mean, I've always pointed out that if you want to see an example, I would go to the May 1957 Life magazine cover. It's online, and it talks about it's the introduction of psychedelic drugs into America. Gordon Wasson's trip to Mexico, where he claims to have discovered God while on the influence of magic mushrooms. And you'll see it, that there's a little box, and inside it has the titles of Great Adventures in the Mexican Desert, and then above it has the words teenage allowances, right? So this, the combination of the two concepts, was deliberately selected to with the idea that eventually the teenagers would be allowed to take the psychedelic drugs. It's just a, they have studied these things, obviously. Wasson was funded by MK Ultra, for heaven's sakes, and so they think that they can, attack the subconscious of people who have a conscious resistance to the oligarch's plan. That's why I really, brought up the little NLP bit from Carlson, is because this is just an example of the how they will address the injection resistance going forward. I think you're going to see a lot of this, and I just wanted to, point it out so people could be aware of it. They won't be coming at the resistant with objective, rational arguments. They're going to be finding influence from, just mechanical influence, like keeping away from food. But then they'll also have stuff like this, where they'll They'll just have people who are supposedly trustworthy talking obliquely about, you're just going to do it anyway, so why don't you just do it?
Just it's go from just wear a mask to just get the shot. Come on, man.
Just take the jab.
Just take the
Just
jab
take
and
the genetic modification and don't worry about
Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it.
Yep. So they do it. Gretchen Whitmore. She was awarded the Profile in Courage Award for her pandemic response.
Was that from Miami Beach?
Yeah, she was brave enough to go to Miami or Florida, because it's crazy down there. In the face of a backlash of threats, Governor Whitmore invoked emergency powers to contain the spread of the virus, issuing early controversial orders to close schools and businesses and mandate mask wearing and ban large gatherings, among other measures to keep people safe, the JFK Library said of Whitmore on Tuesday. Very brave. These heroes went above and beyond for the community in our country and remind us that we can all make a difference if we can answer the call to serve. Jack Schlossberg, who will present the awards with his mother, Caroline Kennedy, on May 26th. I think Caroline should have a discussion with her cousin, Robert Kennedy Jr., about these men.
God Almighty.
Yeah. I think there's some disagreement in the Kennedy family. Of course, Republicans in the state, however, demand, slammed Whitmer throughout her leadership during the pandemic, including the past week when she was awarded, word was announced. Of course, yes, she was caught going to Florida, claiming to visit her sick father in March. I think I mentioned it last week. So I guess it's typical of this whole class just giving each other's awards. I guess it's sort of like the Academy Awards, the Emmys or something, or Grammys. I guess she had the courage to shut down our economy, impoverish, hundreds of thousands, millions of people in the state. How many, I guess the she had a little mini scandal there, similar to Cuomo's, when she killed thousands of elderly people when she,
Tens of thousands.
yeah.
Tens of thousands.
So I guess that took courage. I guess what courage it take? It takes a lot of courage to go along to get along. I don't know what type of courage they're talking about. I
You know,
guess.
it would be fun to actually have a real news show where you'd give Whitmore the award for the biggest genocide number. You know, have some kind of award for the actual reality rather than the just constant propaganda. You know, I mean, so the legacy media, the thank heavens, the attendance of the thing is just collapsing. They are really, becoming irrelevant and almost unwatched. This is really incredibly good news, very, very timely. We have to try to expand the independent media. I wanted to reference the roundtable discussion that you had this week with E. Michael Jones and others. This is exactly the kind of replacement for the legacy media that people should be engaging in now. I mean, that was a real discussion about real ideas. So, it's going to be sad to watch. I think the decimation of the injected. I'm pretty sure, my opinion, as I've said many times, I think, maybe a year from the beginning of the program, you'll start to see the actual lethality of the thing. But this is just the world we live in. Hopefully, those who did not permit themselves to be injected with genetically modified organisms will, have the courage to continue the process, which is going to be organizing and trying to figure out how to fight.
Did you, I guess, when she gets the award or the plaque, whatever that is, she'll put it, display it next to her Anthony Fauci pillow she always has. Gretchen Whitmore. She gives these interviews. There's an Anthony Fauci pillow behind her. Yeah, she can put the plaque next to that, proudly display it, whatever. So, Chris, did you hear in Washington, D.C., the mayor signed an executive order prohibiting dancing at weddings?
Yeah, smart.
Washington, D.C. has
Smart
loosened
one.
most of its COVID-19 restrictions, but has doubled allowed capacity in places like schools, gyms, and live entertainment events, but has drawn the line on dancing or standing at weddings. Or standing at weddings. Wow. Under an order issued on April 26th, Mayor Muriel Bowser, wedding attendees must remain socially distanced in their seats, with standing and dancing both prohibited. What if you dance 6 feet apart? The order does
Yeah.
lift attendance limits, however, with weddings allowed at 25% capacity. What's 25%? I guess of the facility, I don't know. Or up to 250 people. Dancing ban was just put in place at the extra layer of safety to reduce the spread of COVID-19 because when people stand and dance, their behavior changes. DC's mayor told Fox 5 DC. For example, people are more likely to get close and touch each other without dancing. So can't you just leave 3 feet for the Holy Ghost? The old way of doing it?
Well, they've had some pretty good studies. I mean, now at this point, the claims that justified the lockdown, or they used to justify the lockdown, like a social distancing would reduce the flow and whatever. They've all been debunked.
Yes, there's no
There
science
are
at
just
all,
so
yeah.
many studies now showing that there is no difference whatsoever between the counties in the United States that had the least mask wearing and those that had the most stringent adherence to mask wearing. So the data is really in at this point, and it's just, I think, kind of the citizens are exhausted. They don't have the capacity to rebel at this point. They just and this was always the intent, that just shatter the businesses, shatter the psychology, and then there would be more compliance. So they're trying to move us into further and further into the gulag. And this is just the time when those who can see clearly what's happening, resist. I would say go dancing. And this is really what they should do, isn't it, Tim? I mean, they should actually dance, and take movies of it and just force the government to respond.
Yeah.
Because if enough people do that, then the dictatorial kind of power will dissipate.
Well, didn't they see the 1985 Kevin Bacon movie Footloose?
Yeah, they should be playing the song, when they do the video to send to the mayor. But
This
this
is
is.
the interview I thought was interesting. It was one of the Gillian Haarig, a bride who was getting married in July, told Fox 5 that people look forward to having fun and dancing at weddings as a part of the celebration. We're used to wearing masks at this point. We've been doing this since March. Why not allow dancing but make mask a requirement, or even requiring a negative COVID test or wedding guest, or provide vaccination cards? She told. So this is that part of that conditioning. A lot of the country is opening up at this point. So to me, no dancing or standing at a reception seems like a little bit more of stepping backwards instead of moving forward to more that normalcy that we're looking forward to, she said. So she's willing to wear a mask while dancing and or prove effort. Again, that goes back to that conditioning to normalize, vaccination mandates and at these
Yeah,
things.
I mean, in Florida, I've seen some videos of like nightclubs and people are dancing,
Well,
and no one's wearing a
they've had the.
mask.
I think Texas had a game where there was no limits and people were there, no problems. The whole myth of the super spreader event—that's a complete concoction of the media. There's no evidence for that at all. It's always it's a big myth, and they still repeat
Yeah,
it, as if it's a
exactly. So it's
problem.
going to be very interesting to see. Because now you've actually had some very large, sporting events in terms of attendance. And Florida and Texas, if you look at the statistics, are well onto the right-hand side of the bell curve. They had the flu season. The deaths and cases are up. Now they are, heading down. It is in direct contradiction to the claims that are made to support the lockdown. So what's going to happen? What will happen? There is just absolutely clear evidence that the rationale for the lockdown is bogus. So why are people in Washington, D.C., putting up with it?
Well, why was the mayor, the same mayor, had no problem going to a celebration last, I think November, to celebrate Joe Biden's victory, supposed victory, and she said, well, it was important business. Or why is it, of course, we've talked about this before, is last year the looting, the rioting, the protests weren't considered a super spreader events because racism was a public health disease worse than COVID, according to experts. It's whatever.
Yeah.
But that's just an insult to, I mean, insult to everyone's intelligence. So obviously these things, when they gathered to loot, riot, and protest, didn't create super spreader events. That's just a term that they've developed. It's a marketing term. Super spreader event. Oh, that's right. It's got alliteration to it. It works. Super spreader event. It works. It's like super sale. Today's super sale, so it works. So now it's just repeated. I saw it repeated in an interview on CNN, and the moronic, bimbo news teleprompter reader goes, well, we know super spreader events are a problem. No, we don't.
Sure, we do.
So, but that's how they just repeat it, repeat it, repeat it, repeat it,
Yeah, had a chance to walk among the LA homeless people this week. I was down there for a day and decided I wanted to actually go and see. And so there's an area that's kind of half in and half out, and I wandered among the people. High level of fentanyl kind of narcolepsy. They're just, a lot of them are just kind of, but they are all cheek by jowl, and there's no social distancing. There's no mask wearing. And this is, the community that I walk through, maybe 3 or 4,000 people. And I asked them if with those that could talk, I was trying to find someone who could give me the position of the congregation on COVID. Tim, I mean, they literally weren't even aware of it. What are you talking about, man? They could care less. So none of them are getting sick. It's just in complete defiance to the reality. And then it's interesting because you've got these homeless people, just lying there next to one another in clumps. And 5 feet away on the boardwalk, you have middle class people 6 feet apart with masks on. I mean, what is going on? Now, I will say, there was less mask wearing and less distancing than the last time I was in LA. It's definitely worn off in terms of behavior. Of course, we're out of the flu season. Where I live, the town I live, it's almost, you wouldn't even know that COVID had ever existed. There's very little, kind of mask wearing. There's a bit of it, but there's no social distancing. I mean, there's like throngs of people trying to get into restaurants and things, and so it's pretty normal. But they will comply if the government, if the governor, screws us down again. So we're really hoping for, supporting Caitlyn Jenner to help us out of our dilemma.
Yeah, I went out to dinner the other night, and I walk in, and they had the signs for a mask, but no one's wearing a mask. The waiters and waitresses are wearing a mask, but none of the guests of the customers are. But the signs say, wear a mask as you enter. I didn't. And then it also says, I guess you can sit down and eat and take the mask off if you're so inclined. But I go over to, there's a bar, no one's wearing a mask, so just, And then I see there's a sign that please wear a mask if you go into the bathroom.
Yeah, I saw there was one really,
What?
really great video that was sent to me. It was a guy who went into a pharmacy to get his vaccine, and I think you have to pay for it. I mean, there's some nominal charge, but it looked like it may have been a CVS. So he goes in and he's videotaping this, and he goes, "I'd like, can you mind if I can I see the vaccine? I just want to read the ingredients." And the nurse practitioner is a little reluctant, but the guy just grabs it and he starts reading the ingredients, and he goes, "Thanks a lot," and he just walks out with his vaccine. And he goes, "This is mine." And he says, "I'm off to the lab,
Oh,
you know,
really?
to do an." And he vetted it, and he said, "You know, I'm sure she's calling the cops." He gets in his car, and, you know, he drives off. But this is just critical because we should do, you know, this should happen hundreds of times a day to verify that there is that, for example, like the Pfizer and Moderna, that all of the vaccines are putting out are the same material, because they could easily just, you know, put 1 in 10 as lethal, or have, you know, who knows what they could play. So we should be first of all checking to see if it's all the same, and then of course we should be trying to get ahead of what is actually the thing doing. I've been asking people to steal the vaccines and do animal trials. I hope I what I'm not what I hope I'm not, you know, committing a crime. But my point is, you know, if you can get your hands on the vaccines, and you have a lab, that would be this. There should be some ways to do some kind of animal trials to get some idea about what the long-term effects are. You know, because you can shorten supposedly some of the effects of things using certain animals. Not a scientist in this area, but I think I could get, you know, some people to help me with the project in case anyone's interested in it. But we need to start doing our own testing of the thing, and we need to figure out what exactly is the thing capable of. There was a science paper that came out last week saying from it was from a very well-known research facility, and it said that the spike protein in and of itself could cause damage, which was really not understood when they started the vaccine models. The paper didn't really end up accusing the vaccine of anything bad, but it's just, you know, it's an example of just a complete black hole in terms of understanding of what this genetic modification is that we're putting into our body and letting all, you know, the, I mean, they're now they've authorized it for use in children. I mean, it's just wide open. So this was a good week for vaccine resistance. Lots of you know, stories and coming my way about they really have slowed down, and the uptake of the vaccine is you know, maybe a third of what it was, you know, a month ago. So hopefully we can move that even lower as time goes on. And then beyond that, just start getting, you know, understanding of what in the heck is going to happen to the people who put the thing in their body.
And just understand again, it's an unapproved drug. And so when someone says you should take it or require you to take it, they're basically saying you have to be a guinea pig in this experiment, you know.
Yeah, I mean, for Carlson, for example, Tucker Carlson, to make that, you know, that kind of description of, well, it's just sort of inevitable, without adding your caveat, is just criminal. You know, I mean, everyone who talks about the taking of the genetic modification injection should be forced to go into the experimental nature of it and how profound the downside is if the thing is, you know, gets inside you, and then you have unintended results.
No, and why good for you? I don't understand.
Well, that's, yeah, he gives this. I mean, that statement, if it's incidental, you can find it on, if you want to see it, it's, or listen to it again, it's on the Children's Health Defense website. And it's under, they actually promoted as Tucker, you know, making a revelation about the VAERS system, which is something that they approved of. But I think that, you know, anyone with a more clear mind can see that, you know, he's really, you know, attacking the subconscious with, you know, his, you know, very cleverly. And so it's, you know, just this is what we're dealing with. They're going to be attacking us everywhere. everywhere. You're going to see, Tim, trust me on this one, that 60 days from now, it's really going to be, just a they will be putting into place measures against the people who haven't taken the vaccine that will just amaze everyone because they're so determined to get the largest fraction. At some point, the public will have to fight those that don't want this in their body.
Well, that's the only thing you can do at that point.
That's right.
I mean, it's they're forcing something into your body that you don't want.
Yeah, I mean, complete violation of every principle of law and of morality that exists. So,
And no one's any near any informed consent because it's misinformed. That's propaganda. When he admits that there's too much social pressure to resist. You mean social pressure? As in, they don't have really have a sound argument. Just take it, or we'll slowly penalize you and exclude you and ostracize you. I mean, that's obviously they don't have a sound medical argument at that point.
Well, how can anyone give informed consent? I had this argument in this other podcast. How can anyone give informed consent? It's impossible. They haven't finished the trials.
Well, how about
You
when the
don't
whole
know
thing,
what
when the
results
whole,
are going to be. It is impossible
yeah.
to be informed about what is inside the thing
And how about
because
when
no
the
one knows.
entire pandemic's been distorted, the whole thing, the fact that they even call it a pandemic is a distortion of reality. So how can you make an informed consent when you're subjected to not 24/7 nonstop propaganda, lies, and distortions by public health authorities and the government? I mean, it's like informed consent.
I wanted to give another kind of useful datum for people who struggle with these things. There was a study done, USC did it, very scientific, lots of people involved with this, and they made a determination of what the actual infected casualty rate is for COVID. And as you know, out of retirement homes, the CDC's number was 99.74. Well, this turned out to be way too low. I think the actual number they came up with was 99 out of retirement homes. The chance of dying was 99.83. Yeah, 84. And so what this meant was, it isn't like the flu in terms of lethality. It's exactly the same. It's 1 in 1,000. And so, with a lethality of 1 in 1,000, which if you compare this to the, like, what were the numbers? 5%? Remember when Ferguson, gosh, we've been through so much, nonsense. It's hard to keep everything straight. But I think that the lethality number they were using back in February
Three and a
of,
half to 5% or something,
Three and a half to 5%. Well, that didn't turn out to be correct. Now we're at, with very rigorous data analysis, we're down to like 1 in 1,000. Well, why isn't there, since the facts have changed, a material change in the philosophy of the government? If the lockdown and the injections were predicated with the idea that we're dealing with something that could kill 5%, which is, you're moving close to bubonic plague levels. Well, now you're down to just nothing. And yet, you're looking at in Ontario, just absolutely, dictatorial lockdowns, just with the idea of like, we've got to keep this thing from spreading. I mean, they're locking people in homes. The public just has to have this information that the rationale is fake propaganda. You're living in a dream world. I was thinking, I was actually interviewed about our show, believe it or not. And he said, "Well, what it, can you give a like a you know kind of summation?" And I said, "No, I can't. It's impossible." And then I thought about it. I go, "Well, I mean, basically, what our show has covered for all these years is that the reality you're given is fake.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that would be kind of just the basic, general thing. It's
Well,
fate.
they did a, I think it was a study of, I think millennials, whatever age cohort that represents, is their perception of the pandemic. And I think a poll showed that a majority believe that as many as 9%, 30 million Americans had died from COVID. When it
Yeah.
turns out that even the CDC admits that they only can count 9,000, just over 9,000 people dying from COVID, the rest being, comorbidities, meaning that something else killed them that is called COVID. So it's a complete distortion, of reality that's been presented. And when it goes back to my earlier statement, how can you have informed consent when people have been traumatized and terrified by distortions and bald-faced lies for more than a year about this? It's like it goes back, goes back when we talk about the Chauvin trial. Jury, think the jury was affected by, outside events? Well, how about the entire year? prior. I mean, I'm like, what are you talking about? They wouldn't even move the vet. I'm saying, what are you talking about? You can't inform consent on these things. That's like when you talk about electoral fraud or something. Election fraud isn't just the ballot stuffing or, playing with the computer codes to get the numbers up. It's also the entire process going into the election, giving us only two Tweedledee and Tweedledum to vote for. And the way the issues are presented to the public, the way that people are informed about the current events or history, the media and everything. I mean, that's why democracy is such a farce, because people,
Yeah.
the public, those institutions that we rely on for information, education, are just institutions for propaganda and distortion for the regime, for the elite. So that's the bigger picture. And that goes back to all, everything's fake.
Yeah, well, I mean, the election fraud begins in the hospital, like 5 minutes after the baby's born, when it's injected with a vaccine for sexual
Yeah,
transmission disease.
hepatitis B. I mean,
Yeah.
we have
I
public
mean,
health
that
officials who think you should
weakens
give
the
babies
immune system,
hepatitis B
makes
shots.
the kid have a harder time having clear-mindedness in the future. So this is part of the election fraud. The whole thing is the election fraud. It's all the election fraud. Nothing but election fraud. So, it's like, yeah, like you said, Tweedledee or Tweedledum.
I mean, well, this has something to do with what we're talking about next. One thing
Yeah.
is anarcho-tyranny is a concept I think people are getting very familiar with. This was a concept that I think the term I think was coined by the I guess conservative columnist Samuel Francis back in the early 90s. It told of or diagnosed a condition of both anarchy, the failure of the state to enforce the laws, and at the same time tyranny, the enforcement of laws by the state for oppressive purposes. He described it as such, the criminalization of law-abiding and innocent. Francis expounded, is achieved in such a state through exorbitant taxation, bureaucratic regulation, the invasion of privacy, the engineering of social institutions such as the family and local schools, and the imposition of thought control through sensitivity training, multicultural curricula, hate crime laws, gun control laws that punish or disarm otherwise law-abiding citizens, but have no impact on violent criminals who get guns illegally, and a vast labyrinth of other measures. Does that sound familiar?
Los Angeles.
Yes. I mean, look what's happened the past year. It was an interesting concept because you have the situation where, again, this isn't just something of, the system collapsing. Actually, it's the system doing what it's supposed to, just that the system has different priorities than what we're, led to believe. So you have this sort of combination of oppressive government power against the innocent, the law-abiding, simultaneously this sort of this grotesque paralysis or the ability of this of the will to use power to sort of provide for or secure basic public duties such as protection of public safety. And of course we saw that, last year when police stood down, took a knee, and let the rioters, sow mayhem, loot, and these things. I mean, it's very similar to some of the concept of bio-Leninism, meaning that it's not just something that's happening, it's actually a strategy. that's employed to manage and social engineer the society. They make them dependent, and also so they lose morale to self-govern and actually be responsible free citizens.
Exactly. So we have a very hoity-toity private school in the area. I won't give the name, but it's hired a person of color as the headmaster in spirit of the times. And he was interviewed in the local cultural Marxist newspaper, which is the only one we have. Well, actually, we have three newspapers, but they're all cultural Marxists. Anyway, and so they said, well, what is your philosophy? And he said, inclusiveness is the willingness to change. This was his philosophy. So inclusiveness is the willingness to change. And I thought, this is 100% anarcho-tyranny, because you have obviously a completely impossible to morally control situation if you're just including everybody inside of something that's supposed to be structured to produce an education, for the Ivy League, right? And when you say the willingness to change, then this is like the authoritarian personality, the idea of like European pride, kind of understanding of an ethos, of how we operate, of relating to one another in a special way, because we have this relationship, this historic relationship. That's gone. You see, it's tyranny. You have this one concept, inclusiveness, which is just it voids the everything else, and you now have no. You have nothing left except you have anarchy, and then the tyranny of the enforcement of the philosophy. So I think that this is, kind of a good synopsis of where our country is. And anarcho-tyranny is actually a very, very good term, because the anarchy that they're creating, which is the forced acceptance of inclusiveness under any terms whatsoever. I mean, for heaven's sakes, Caitlyn Jenner as the conservative candidate, for the governor. I mean, it's just these things are unimaginable from, any kind of, perspective of reason, but here they are. But we're going to experience these things, as and it may have the appearance of anarchy, but believe me, in back of all of this, Tim, is true tyranny. It's going to be under, we're going to be under very tight control here.
There's an account I read. It takes place back in the late 80s in Detroit, where there was a neighborhood, and there's a crack house that was a source of all types of trouble for the neighborhood. And neighbors would call police, would come in and do something, the shootings, the violence, that sort of thing. And the police would never come until finally a couple of local residents went and burned the house down. The police showed up and arrested the arsonists quickly. So there's your example of anarcho-tyranny. But there is a good description of why it flourishes, and this is from the article. Why anarcho-tyranny flourishes. There are several reasons why anarcho-tyranny flourishes. The first place, it is obviously an easy way for government bureaucrats and lawmakers to enhance their own power and the public funds at their disposal by playing on legitimate, well-founded fears of citizens over crime. It might seem that it would be just as easy for anarcho-tyrants to actually do something about crime instead of rehearsing all the pretenses of doing something about it. But the fact is, there's almost nothing the government today can do about crime. The essential reason for that is that the ensuing Warren Revolution is the promulgation of the Incorporation Doctrine by the Supreme Court. And the ensuing Warren Court Revolution of criminal law, the control of the criminal justice system has been removed from the control of lawmakers and elected officials, as well as from law enforcement, and now almost entirely subordinate to the judicial system. Thus, there can be no local politicians who win elections by promising and carrying out an effective program of crime fighting, because effective laws or punishment he might enact will be dependent upon the consent of the courts. Since law and enforcement remain primarily a local state function, but is effectively under the control of federal courts, local law and order leaders can do nothing effective and have to make do with anarcho-tyrannical applesauce. And of course, with someone like Merrick Garland as the attorney general, if there are any so local officials so inclined, you know, immediately they'll be a subject of a Department of Justice investigation. But there is also here you go. But there's also another reason for why anarcho-tyranny flourishes. Throughout the century, in tandem with the emergence of the Leviathan state, there has occurred a managed pacification and manipulation of the citizens, with the result that Americans are increasingly habituated to an entirely passive role in government, economy, culture, and now even basic social functions, such as child rearing and health care. This process of pacification is clearly related to the managerial revolution in the United States and the emergence of centralized, technically skilled elites that specialize in the usurpation of previously autonomous social functions. Hence, just as Americans in the managerial regime are dependent on mass corporations, offices, and factories for their livelihoods, just as they are dependent on mass political parties and illusory mass participation in the political process, just as they are dependent on and engulfed by the mass culture that has continuously fed to them in spectator sports, television, film, art, music, and popular literature, and just as in all these dimensions of life, Americans increasingly surrender the active and participatory roles that Republican government demands, so too in anarcho-tyranny, we are habituated to an entirely passive role in securing our protection from criminals. George Will's police saturation is indeed a logical and practical outcome of this kind of mass pacification, as more and more Americans swallow the lie that they are too stupid and too reckless to protect themselves, their homes, and their families, and that cops, who can barely make it through high school, and bureaucrats, who cannot support themselves outside government payroll, must do it for them. So that's an interesting, it's all part of this sort of this managerial process, you know, bureaucracy. And, you know, you don't want people with the wherewithal or the deal or the inclination to do that, because those people are more difficult to govern and control.
Yeah, that's how we see it. But obviously there was a plan in back of this managerial dictatorship mm-hmm. that's being set up. So the average person may look up and see this, you know, scientism and technocrats and managers and think, well, this is just progress moving forward. But as we both know, there was obviously a plan in back of all of this. And I think that, you know, they boil the frog slowly and it doesn't complain. I think in the last year, it's just, they've accelerated the slave state onset so dramatically that there is a real chance to have some angry frogs for a change.
Yeah.
And I wonder, you know, like in LA, I was talking to people down there and, you know, like I was asking about the police and, you know, they moved the Soros funded DA from San Francisco down to Los Angeles
mm-hmm.
and elected him there. I think it's a he. And anyway, the people I was talking about, they were saying, They and these were, you know, it's so fascinating to hear this language, because I can remember talking to black friends I had when I was younger and kind of played basketball in Venice, California, and they would tell me that they were afraid to call the police. I think you know, this was a real idea in their mind that the police, just if they came, their chances of having something bad happen to them were good. And so they were just, you know, they would try to, you know, shoot it out on their own terms, you know. Well, now the white business class was telling me that.
Uh-huh.
They were saying, you know, I was asking, well, like, what about, you know, when you have like that's the last thing in the world you want is the cops show up. Basically, they're having to learn to intimidation of, you know, because you have like you know, when BLM and Antifa are organized, there's and they're not, and the police aren't doing anything, unless there is a real armed militia that knows what it's doing, they are unstoppable. They'll just go and destroy anything they want. But there's a lot of just street crime that happens, particularly from the fentanyl brigade, you know, and these aren't political individuals. So it's left up to now, it's getting more and more, what I can gather, that the businesses are organizing to try to, you know, come up with ways to stay in existence, because you have such a close proximity of sort of homeless culture and the old bourgeois, you know, mercantile class. They're really very, very close physically. And so, you know, these guys are just having to try to figure out novel ways to keep their businesses functioning and keep their employees safe. And I was saying, guys, maybe you should look at as a permanent structure. You know, this isn't just a, you know, like till the vaccine, you know, so-called arrives. Maybe you should think about this as something that you really are going to need to do long-term.
Yeah.
Because this would be the beginning of the organization that I'm hoping will happen.
There'll be a parallel governing structure, because the existing one has sort of abdicated its duties, and also is completely, at this point, completely illegitimate. You know.
Yeah, and I mean, they should lawyer up and figure out, because
they don't follow the Constitution. We're supposed to get this charter. Just get technical with them.
Well, I mean, at this point, it's kind of the Wild West. When you have a Soros DA who's there to stand down the police, you know, that Soros DA will have as a focus the destruction of the white middle class.
Well, because that's why they're installed there. You know,
that's where they're installed. So this is what that person will want. But, you know, the tools to do it are still being developed. They don't have like police forces that will go in and, you know, arrest people for being white at this point. So this is a time when there is some organization, because, Tim, what are these people to do? I mean, a lot of these guys have businesses that have been in existence for years. This is the only way they've ever made a living. They own a building from six. It's their entire net worth. If they could, they would leave. You know, they would all move to Florida.
Yeah.
But they just aren't able to. So what can they do? They have to figure out a way to try to defend themselves and try to stay in existence.
Well, I mean, when you think of the term anarcho-tyranny, it's hard not to think of that. That you know, look at that term or think of it that term and see what's going on right now, as we've saw the past year, where Americans, peaceful Americans, were arrested for taking the children to the park or trying to go to church worship or just going on the beach swimming, and then of course a few weeks later, police forces becoming, you know, standing down or just becoming sort of passive onlookers as rioters burned, looted, you know, maimed, pillaged, and murdered. Talk about a stark example of anarcho-tyranny. And of course, then you have the media, of course, casting aspersions on ordinary citizens for simply protesting, their businesses being shut down, their livelihoods being destroyed, or people not wearing masks. But then again, the same media excusing riotous, you know, looters and murderers spreading mayhem. You know, smashing windows and stores and all that. So, I mean, it's, you know, it is stark at this point.
It is stark. And it's, you know, they just have to find a new level of emotional strength. We lived in a dream world. Americans were living in a dream world. Their political class was developing technology to destroy the citizens. We were unaware of it. They were developing lifetime actors to steal our minds so that we wouldn't even know where we were. We would be in these cul-de-sacs with false dialectics. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, that's a dream world. We've woken up and we're living in 1946 Hungary. You know, it is a slave state with a Bolshevik kind of government, which was impenetrable. So we have to have a different, you see what I'm saying? We need a different mindset than the one we woke up with, you know, 2 years ago, the dream world, you know, we're just going to go out and it's America. It's a clown world, but you know, at the end, we're all going to get through all this. No, this isn't that. That is gone. It is not coming back. This world is the real world, and it needs a real response. And so, the thing I was saying to this guy earlier was that, you know, they take the position that this is a horrible thing. You know, that just, oh my God, it's a nightmare. Well, that response is just what's been coded in you by the oligarchs. You know, we are designed to defend ourselves. We are designed to fight and to have territory and pride and ethnic pride. This is really what we are in our real self. To come up to that personality is not to, you know, oh my God, this is just terrible. Look, it's returning to your real self. Don't be afraid of fighting. You know, if you just, and you know, as, again, of course, you want to make sure your body's right, because once you're healthy, you know, the emotions will start moving in the right direction. And once you are fighting and organizing, the depression, the anxiety, the urge to vote for Caitlyn Jenner for governor. I mean, these things will all disappear, Tim. You'll know, you'll be clear-minded and you'll know what to do.
Mm-hmm. There is an interesting piece. This is just, I guess, serendipity. This was at Rush Winter's site, Winter Watch, on anarcho-tyranny. And California anarcho-tyrants prepared to release 7,000-8,000 hardened felons into unsuspecting communities. Anarcho-tyranny is an aspect of Discordian Satanism that combines oppressive government power against the innocent and law-abiding while simultaneously exhibiting a grotesque paralysis of will to carry out basic public duties such as public safety, protection. Anarcho-tyranny breaks down society by failing to punish criminals and refusing to enforce legitimate order. It also criminalizes the innocent. Over the weekend, reports emerged exposing the Office of Administrative Law in California for approving the early release of at least 76,000 California inmates. Among them, 63,000 are felons convicted of violent crimes, and 20,000 are currently serving life sentences without possibility of parole. Even before this latest travesty, murder rates saw a historic increase in 2020 compared to 2019, with more than 1,200 additional killings over the year in a sample of 34 communities, according to a recent study. Homicide rates jumped by 30% from 2019 to 2020. Curiously, the rationale for releasing hardened criminals was to facilitate safer prisons. This is typical satanic inversion. Now watch for the flurry of public body dumps, disappearances, serial killings, and rapes. The ranks of anarcho-rioters and berserkers will also be reinforced as the thugs go on the payrolls of the tyrants. NBC News. The changes were approved this week by the State of Office Administrative Law with little public notice. They were submitted and approved within a three-week span of emergency regulations. So they're dumping these people into the public without any notification or debate. And this also goes to the fact, and you kind of alluded to it, is that the Soros-installed DAs and mayors although I heard Kim Gardner in St. Louis is facing disciplinary action, which is a positive sign. But you have Kim Fox, I think, in Chicago. There's, of course, we mentioned Mario Bowser in D.C. There's that Larry Krasner in Philadelphia, Lori Lightfoot in Chicago. London Breed, I think, San Francisco, she's quite a piece of work. But all
the, yeah, she's been... subpoenaed for I think it's like 45 infractions.
Yeah. So all these officials are installed to kind of, and then they're just releasing criminals into the public for no particular reason other than what, to make prisons safe or something. So, I mean, and the fact that it's done without any debate or any real, public notice or anything. So people can't offer, their point of view on it. But I mean, obviously the results are easily predictable when you do that. But I mean, it's hard to think anything else that it's intentional, you know.
It cannot possibly be anything other than intentional. The Soros DAs have as their mission the destruction of the white middle class. This is just a great way to accelerate the process.
Yeah, and it's a form of a color revolution, and it basically you infiltrate the institutions and corrupt them, use them for your use once you grab control of state power, then you go after your enemies. That's the plan that was laid out by the Hungarian that you talk about all the time.
Yeah, Lukasz, yeah.
Look, Gray Lucas said that state
Yeah.
used grab the apparatus of state and use it to terrorize your enemies. People
I
have a hard
mean
time looking in those terms.
that could be a perfect description of what's going on in the United States right now. They have grabbed the apparatus. We believed in the process of democracy. We thought we were participating in it. In fact, it was completely controlled. It has been for decades. And now they have control of it, and we still, it's kind of like fiat currency. They control fiat currency. We still believe in it, that it's real, right? So because of that, they can manipulate us with it. We believe that there is something legitimate about the political class because, for heaven's sakes, we went to the election, we cast ballots, blah, blah, blah. But it's not. And there's nothing legitimate. All there is mind control, and so now when you've got the DAs releasing violent criminals serving life sentences into communities without any public notice,
Yeah,
right?
there was that in New York. They released a bunch of thugs out of Rikers Island, and there's this huge spike in crime. Then Mayor de Blasio is shocked that some people who are released on good behavior are he's shocked that they go out and commit more
Shocked.
crime.
Well,
I mean,
I mean, Tim, I mean, bear in mind that the economy in California is crippled because of lockdowns, particularly Los Angeles, where most of them were released. What do you think these people are going to do for a living? Are they going to be dog walkers? I mean, what are the 70,000 violent criminals going to do now that they've been released? I mean, it's going to be hard for them to fill out a PPI form. So they're going to turn to crime. They will start robbing people, and they will, with the sanction that they now have, they will come out to the new American philosophy of the whites as a guilty and second-class people who are not supported by the police or the politicians. So they are easy prey.
Well, white people can't complain about it because the biggest threat to the country right now is not the spike in homicide rate or crime. It's apparently white supremacist terrorists. According to Joe Biden.
That would be some guy trying to run a stationery store to feed his family. This is what you would call of as white supremacy. And he would be, the Antifa thugs that come in and rob him are, it's a moral question as to whether or not something wrong has occurred, because it is in a way of rectifying historical wrongs, right? I mean, they don't come out and say that, but it is a flavor that's in all of the Antifa and all of the media's presentation now of history. You can see it all over the place where they're trying to bring up the idea of the whites as this guilty people that owes something, needs to be punished, basically.
Yes, because
So
obviously,
now
if
they've
you.
released the this brigade. I mean, what do you think the racial component is of the 70,000 inmates that was released? Probably 90% Latino and Black. It's going to have a hard time assimilating into a culture in a way that, isn't going to be threatening to, and not just threatening, but violent toward middle class people. In fact, Just as an aside, Latinos that I know who are, well, business owners and particularly in my community, they've been here in their own homes, and so they're pretty established. They are just horrified. I mean, and the thing is, the whites are so culturally Marxist, kind of programmed. It wouldn't surprise me if the Latinos, the Latino middle class, which is actually fairly large in California, might be the one that just says enough of this nonsense and actually fights back. Particularly if we can unify them with the transgenders.
Yes.
That's a joke, sorry.
Yes, it's a coalition.
It's a coalition to save California. So
Tranny Brigade.
the Tranny Brigade.
Yeah,
I
it's
mean,
like,
I can just see Bruce, with
I guess what, I don't know,
I
what is
don't
he
know
called, like the
how he's going to do it, but I can see him just standing down, an unruly mob, and maybe RuPaul. This is, you can make these jokes, but or attempts at jokes, but at the end of the day, man, it's at this point, it's we're just going to have to
Well,
fight
I
our
mean, the
way
broader
out.
strategy here with anarcho-tyranny is, and we've talked about this before. We did the show, I think, on the California mafia or the elite out there, is that with that character David Baselin, he was Truman's guy who was charged with, I think, selling off all the property that was seized by the Japanese in California after Roosevelt's executive order. So after the war, he got in there and he started doling out, selling at a sharp discount to his friends and associates. This was like Paul Ziffrin and the Pritzkers, I think, and the Crown family, a Hyatt family, I think, were beneficiaries of this. And this became the source of vast fortunes and control of California. He later became a judge when the, I think, in the appeals court. Truman appointed him, I think, to avoid an IRS audit or something. But in return for doling out these very wealthy assets and properties, he got like a percentage, 9% take in these property holdings, became very wealthy and influential in his own right. But then he became a very liberal, civil libertarian reputation in the appeals court, federal appeals court. And the Ron Unz article, I guess, speculated that what was the motivation for this? Was this sort of guilt for the money he had, for the property he had stolen? Or was this a strategy? Maybe ordering the mental institutions to release people and sort of making it harder for the police to enforce the law. Civil liberties was to sort of create an environment where there's a lot more street crime, because if you create a lot more street crime, people are going to be concerned about that and not the high level, plundering that's going on, corruption in the state. And of course, right now, if people are, whether it's the new normal and all these assets, by the way, all this the wealth transfers that are occurring under the cover of the COVID-19 lockdown, and this huge growth in wealth on a part of these corporations like Amazon, and some of these outfits like BlackRock or State Street Capital, and how they're buying up vast swaths, of real estate and property. And but if you have a lot of street crime and mayhem on the streets, it's going to be harder for people to concentrate on. They're going to worry about being mugged. And so this is something that might, just to creating mayhem on the streets to distract from everything.
Sure, and there's no question that this is a wealth transfer, because that's part of the control. I mean, the destruction of all the middle class businesses, I think that's one of the key goals of the whole lockdown purpose. They wanted to take away that component of freedom and dignity from the middle class. And I mean, you've seen the statistics. It's been very successful. They have demolished middle class business owners. So,
And all that money that the money flow that used to go into these small businesses now are being absorbed by corporations, where
it's online. It's all Amazon and online business. And of course, online business is monitored business. It's business
Yes.
that they can look at every single aspect of it. So it isn't free business. And of course, it's not competitive. How can, they talk about, well, the online environment is, it's this kind of competitive. Look, you're not going to be able to compete against Amazon
No.
at the end of the day. You're not going to set up your little stationery store online and then, think that, well, I can, what it'll do, of course, it will destroy the thing that made middle class business so precious, which is the social connections between the owners, the business person, and the customers. This was so important because it's just such an integral part of our culture and of our strength. It's one of the ways we got to know each other, trust each other, and could operate as a group. It was a kind of constant assembly. And I know, I mean, I've owned small businesses, so I've been there, I've seen it, felt it. That was why it was targeted in this way. There's no purpose for the lockdown, other than to, I mean, there, it's creating of a slave state, slave mentality, but the process means you got to get rid of the aspects of freedom that middle class was using.
And that's I mean, it's fairly obvious at this point, why, again, why is it that a Walmart can stay open, but a small restaurant can't,
Yeah, I mean, Tim, here's a philosophy. Why don't they shut down all of the oligarch businesses for a year and then give them PPI loans and let the middle class businesses make outrageous profits for 12 months?
Yes, let's see how that works.
How would that be?
Well, it's obvious. I was listening to a show out of Ireland, Gemma Doherty, I think. Gemma Doherty, I think is her name. She's a Irish journalist, and she made the observation that on Good Friday, all the churches were shut down, but the local sex shop was open in Dublin.
God have mercy. Yeah. Well,
That's a good,
that should be. You get to see the what the social the new the social strata of the new world order, don't you?
That's their priorities, and
So
it.
it's a grim situation, but it doesn't mean we need to be grim. It's just the opposite. We need to like find the energy to fight. We people just shouldn't be putting up with that.
Yeah.
Shouldn't they
Well,
should
anger is
not.
a motivation. I mean, obviously, anger, there's righteous anger. There's a time for it, And so this is what people should be angry about, that's
Yeah, of
rightfully
course.
angry. Yeah.
They should be angry and they should be organized. There has been like really great protests in England, in London especially.
Yeah, there was a big one recently, yeah, last
And
week.
so the public is not done fighting. Hopefully the COVID injection program that they have in mind will leave 25% of the population organized and furious, because that'll be the time when we can
Well, that
actually.
would be a sizable and quite formidable irate minority that is necessary.
Oh yeah,
No.
in the United States it'd be over 75 million
Yeah.
people. So I mean, you can't just to use a number. So yeah, of course. And the people who are taking the jab, I hate to say it because it's like I understand so often why they are doing it, but Tim, they're basically useless anyway.
Yep.
I mean, if you can't see through this to the extent that you would not permit gene therapy to be done on you by the oligarchs, you're just intellectually in a place that isn't ever, well, it's very unlikely it'll ever be clear-minded enough to resist. You're going to make excuses. I mean, I know people are taking the jab that are actually believe that they are doing some kind of patriotic noble act.
Well, the president, their president told them
Yeah. So okay, so
that.
my response is next. You know, when I hear, I just next. I can't. There's no point in wasting time with
Yeah.
it. You know, so just try to move on to people who are more clear-minded, and then find a way to organize. Man, I'm just doing everything I can in my neighborhood to, without much luck, I might say, but I'm hoping that there are a lot of people, oddly enough, that, well, it's like I say, 25%. They're resistant, hesitant, and they don't want to be pushed into it. That could tip them over. So, oh, this is interesting times, Tim. The next 6 months will tell an incredible tale, you know, one way
Well,
or another.
in the meantime, I guess they'll be doling out awards, presidential medals of freedom, profiles of courage to governor, maybe to another governor. Governor Whitmer maybe will get a presidential medal, freedom award or something, and another Emmy award to Cuomo, and maybe Gavin Newsom will be nominated for something
Sure.
as they award themselves for their
Well,
fine
I mean,
work.
I would think maybe a Nobel Prize for freedom.
There you go. Yes,
I mean, why
Nobel.
not go right to the top? I mean, for heaven's sake. So, yeah, the awards. And I think, you know, when I listen to, I've been reading like some of the people who are pro-vax, the sophists that have been hired, you know, to write these hit pieces. They all have like two PhDs and things like this. You know, these awards, these degrees, they have a psychological power just like the dollar does, you know, but it can disappear overnight. It truly can. So, you know, I'm not discouraged. I mean, I actually am looking forward to the next 6 months, looking forward to the fight, you know.
That's good. Okay, Joe.
All right, Tim, have a great week, brother.
Enjoy the weekend.
Talk
Bye-bye.
to you. You too. Talk to you in a week.
Thank you.